On today's show, let's get you ready for Cavs Bucks on Wednesday night. We'll talk about that and more on this new episode of Locked On Cavs, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astor Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. And if you're going to any Cavs game soon or just happen to see it on newsstands, go pick up the issue of Cleveland Magazine that Cleveland Magazine has out now that has got Donovan Mitchell and Kevin Love out on the cover. So go check that out. You can buy it at some team shop locations in the arena as well. I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fearless, where that man over there is Evan Damrell. He is the proprietor of Write Down. You could go check that out today. This episode, as always, is produced by the one and only Jake Stevens. I want to tell you, too, that this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/LockedOnNBA. Okay, today's show, here's what we're going to do. Segment one, we're going to talk about the play of late of one Isaac Okoro. Segment two, we're going to look ahead to Cavs-Bucks. That is on Wednesday night in Cleveland. Cavs continue their homestand. That's a 7 p.m. tip. And third segment, we're going to look at the Cavs, where they are in the standings right now versus where they were at last year, their differences in net rating, offensive rating, those things, and just get through what we mean of it. But Evan, are you ready to start with one Isaac Okoro?
Yeah, I'm ready to chat about it. It should be hopefully a nuanced discussion. I will say David Zavac made me giggle the other last night when Donovan Mitchell said it's free to be kind, and Zavac's just like, okay, I'll be nice to Isaac Okoro. But he's a bit of he's taken on Colin Sexton's honor of being one of the more polarizing players on this roster, I'd say.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I tend to think that he is like, it's not even like a polarizing thing. It is that a lot of people just think he absolutely sucks. Like the amount of like tweets, and look, Twitter is not everything. Twitter is like a decaying platform, and B, also just like a very small, intense group of people yelling about things on the internet. So like that in itself is like kind of silly. People are like going so far as to say like, oh, get Isaac Okoro off of this basketball team, get Isaac Okoro like off of like the rotation. Mm-hmm. I don't understand going that far, and I think like based on the last couple games, and there's some numbers all throughout there. There's some things about his season overall that I think should give you pause and are worth examining. I think he's played well the last couple of games, and like it's without the shot making, it is without that skill that is the skill we think about the most, the skill that we stare at the most, and being 3-point shooting and shot making for a role playing wing. But look at how he's playing on defense. Look at how he's a guy who pushes the pace. There is impactful things here he is doing. It is just like I understand also why there is like some frustration with what else he does and what he doesn't do more appropriately, but don't know how you look at the last several games he's played and think like this guy is not like looked better or played better than he has at other points this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just it's tough because he is in an odd situation. He is in Isaac Okoro, and I do think about the fact that like JB Bickerstaff kind of owned up to the fact that last season was a bit of a rarity for Cleveland, where like the expectation was they weren't going to be very good. It was going to be a bit of a learning year. You're going to see Evan Mobley kind of grow and get acclimated to being an NBA player because that was his rookie season. You're going to see Darius Garland grow a little bit. You're going to see a lot of different things. And I think just Darius Garland coming out nuclear hot, Jared Allen just having like a seamless fit next to him and Evan Mobley, and then Evan Mobley just being much better than advertised on defense, like accelerated a lot of things. And Isaac Okoro was a player who didn't benefit from that, and just in terms of player development, like, yeah, there's times Okoro like gave you some juice offensively, whether it was playmaking, scoring off cuts, using his physicality, mostly being a very good point of attack defender. And it's tough to say, like, evaluate, like, okay, this is, like, the make or break year of Isaac Okoro. Like, we all agree on that. And thus far, it's kind of the same situation, just a different coat of paint. Because now you have year two Evan Mobley, Darius Garland kind of coming off a nuclear third year. But more than anything, you have Donovan Mitchell trying to get acclimated to this offensive flow and also just how Cleveland functions on either end of the floor. That I think a little bit of it is like punting it to the wayside in terms of player development. Like, you asked JB a very good question of like how tough it is to kind of balance like winning now and player development, and just like it's a fine line you have to walk. And I think the Cavs obviously do prioritize Isaac Okoro's development. They prioritize the development of any young player or just any player in general on this roster, but it may not be like the most pressing need in terms of like the general day-to-day for the Cavs, where they're maybe more focused on let's win this game, let's continue being one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, and let's get to the playoffs and let's make some noise that way. And then like we're kind of seeing Isaac Okoro benefiting from the lack of depth at the small forward spot, but we can talk about that in a bit. It's just it's a tricky situation for him.
Here's where I think this is different, and this is just somewhat of a little bit of a recent development, but I think is worth noting. This is what I think the expectations part is absolutely part of this, right? Like, the Cavs have a higher expectation of how far they can go, who can play for them, who can help them win games. That has certainly changed, and that puts pressure on a guy like Okoro. Here's what is different, I think, and that is worth noting. We have to see where this goes. His shot profile has changed. The thing people wanted him to do differently has changed. So for the year, he's taking more corner threes than he ever has relative to his shot profile. That is progress. He is shooting a career best at the rim, 67%. He's taking fewer threes per game because he's playing fewer minutes, but the percentage of threes that he's taking as part of his shot profile has gone up. He is taking the shots you want him to attempt to take. In the last couple games, we have seen in Okoro that is letting them fly, miss or not. Even when he misses the first one or the second one, and he's made like one over two games, he's taking them. The troubling part, he's at 22% on threes for the year. That's a bad number. That is a career low. That is not a number that is going to make him like be someone the Cavs will build with beyond next season when his rookie contract will get to wherever it is. But what I think, Evan, is that the shot profile that we're seeing from Okoro this year, some of the cutting, some of the attacking, some of the him running off of rebounds and pushing the pace and being the guy that is pushing in transition almost more than anyone else on this roster sometimes. I think this is the template, and I think the best thing you could hope for is like he gets to push this version of himself and you see where it goes, and then you make an informed decision. This is him in the role that you would want for him when the Cavs are what they're going to be. And if he doesn't figure it out, fine, you move on, you find someone else to do it. But if you're going to have an in-house option to figure out to do what he's trying to do right now, this is your best bet to find it.
I think, like you said, trying to find a replacement might be an avenue for Cleveland. But honestly, if you're able to keep that kind of cost-controlled option, if you're able to punt a year and wait for his rookie contract to fully expire next season, then talk about an extension. And if he becomes more of a serviceable player, that's more ideal for Cleveland. And I know I drew the ire of some folks saying, like, listen, he can make the most of his opportunities, like, starting small forward, but you're absolutely right. Like, he's doing a lot of things with the opportunities given to him, and, like, the Cavs, especially against the Jazz the other night, like, were hitting on a lot of different just levels in general, and you saw Isaac Okoro benefit from it, where, like, Okoro had the freedom to play with pace. He saw him have the freedom to kind of move the ball a little bit in fast break scenarios. Like, he adds a little bit of a different dimension, a different level for Cleveland offensively, and then on the inverse, defensively, like, he's been playing very well as a point of attack defender, and I think most impressively is, like, yeah, he does rack up fouls from being over-aggressive sometimes, but he's also able to zero in possessions and in certain situations where he has the trusted J.B. Bickerstaff to say, like, okay, Isaac, you may have 3-4 fouls, but we need you to go out there and keep defending the best perimeter player, and he has done so very well up to this point, and I think it's definitely something worth watching. And I think more than anything, and when I say making the most of this opportunity, is Lamar Stevens is out, and he's doubtful for this game against Milwaukee on Wednesday. Dean Wade is out. Caris LeVert is going to be nailed to the bench because that's what J.B. Bickerstaff thinks is best for LeVert. Jetty Osmond's kind of cut from the same cloth as LeVert, where you don't want him doing too much, and maybe it's more easier to maximize Osmond's opportunities. So if like he doesn't have it, it's easier to pull the leash on him a little bit and just kind of yank him from the rotation period that night. Mm-hmm. But Okoro is just like so interesting where, like you said, he's also not hesitating in three-point attempts as well, where like you want to give him more opportunities to learn and grow from it, because people kind of just use him as like the easiest target just to criticize, because he kind of puts up a lot of nothing in terms of box score stuff, but like he does have a positive impact on the floor. He does play his butt off on defense a lot, and I think you want him taking, he doesn't make those 3-point attempts, because you want him to be confident in his offensive game so he's not a total liability on either end. And I know this is probably a stark tonal shift, because probably multiple episodes ago, like, I was very out on Isaac Okoro, but like you're seeing a little of encouraging things. You just hope he can continue to kind of build that momentum and then put it a little bit together in year three.
Yeah, you are hoping, you have to keep coaxing what this is out of him and see where it goes. And if the development doesn't work, that's fine. You missed on a first round pick. That sucks. You have to, like, in-house options have to ideally be part of whatever the Cavs are building, because like finding wings who can play for you is going to be expensive. And it's just easier to keep the wins in-house if you can figure out how to make them a little bit better. But we'll talk about Okoro more. I'm sure we'll see if he starts Wednesday against the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to dive into when that game Wednesday, Cavs-Bucks, 7 p.m. tip in Cleveland. But first, this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure. Whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or becoming a parent, therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient and accessible for anyone, anywhere, 100% online. I myself have been going to therapy regularly for several years now, dating back to college. It's made me a better person. It's made me more in tune to what is going on around me, going around in my nutto head up there. And it helps me manage what is coming at me, what is being thrown my way in life. I cannot imagine what I would be without therapy. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lockedonNBA. All right, back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damerl. I will tell you that if you want a really big story going on in the NBA right now, go check out Locked On Suns. The Phoenix Suns have a new owner. The team was purchased.
Go ahead.
Purchased for $4 billion with a B. So go, if you want to learn about that story, go check out Brendan Killeen over at Locked On Suns.
I also checked out Locked On Bulls, because apparently Zach LaVine is not connected with the front office whatsoever. So
blow it up. Blow it up. Anyway, let's go on to Cavs Bucks. Cavs, Evan, are 0-2 on the year versus the Bucks, who are really good. The Cleveland lost 113-98 on the November 16th, and then lost 117-102 in late November. So, Evan, round three, first one in Cleveland. What are you looking for as far as round two between these two teams goes?
So it's a question I actually want to ask the players prior to the game at shoot around, where it's just whoever's available. Like, hey, you have beaten Boston twice in pretty convincing fashion. I know it took overtime the second time around, but like those are statement wins. You hit another gear the other night against the Jazz. You didn't let the distraction of LeBron James get to you. Is the next like kind of mountain you're kind of trying to climb is like, hey, we can hang with the best team in the Eastern Conference, arguably the league, because going 0-3 against the Bucks is kind of an indicator like this is where the Cavs kind of need to get to still. And if they're able to at least get a win against Milwaukee in their one of their next two opportunities, this being this one and then the following one coming January 2nd at home against Milwaukee, if Cleveland's either able to win a game or even up this series with the Bucks, I think that's a pretty good way to say, like, yeah, they're in a better spot than they were multiple weeks ago when they last played Milwaukee, when they kind of got embarrassed. Like, they've been beaten pretty soundly by Milwaukee twice now this season, and it's an interesting stylistic matchup. And I think not having Lamar Stevens just as a body to throw at Giannis might be tough for Cleveland, but I am curious to see, like, listen, they have a lot of good momentum riding off that Utah win. Can they carry that into a game where this is a team they have struggled with across the board, and can they kind of hang with the Bucks and maybe ride that home momentum and win?
The Bucks, getting that rest coming off of the Jazz game into this Bucks game is a big deal. As Evan noted, It is Lamar Stevens is officially listed as doubtful on the injury report with right knee soreness, but so that would lead you to think he's probably not going to play. Obviously, Ricky Rubio still out, Dean Wade still out, Dylan Windler still out, Isaiah Mobley out as he's at the G League Showcase. Notably, Mamadi Diakite is not listed as out on the injury report as a two-way player, so perhaps that would lead you to believe he's going to be with the team and maybe like just there for depth, fouls, and et cetera in the front court against Milwaukee. I'll be curious to see what they do, what kind of looks they throw at Giannis. Like, does Jared Allen get this assignment? Do they give Mobley that assignment? Like, what does that kind of look like and how they kind of navigate that? The Bucks are a really big team in a lot of what they do, and that presents some challenges for the Cavs. It just does. The other part of this, Evan, that I'm curious to see, and this is the Cavs are going to be only the second team to see him play for the Bucks, is what Joe Ingles is going to bring for Utah. He threw some really fun lobs coming off of actions and screens to Giannis the other night. That adds like a really interesting dimension to what the Bucks can do in offense in addition to everything else they have. The Cavs are going to be, again, one of the first teams to see this. So what is their game plan to kind of deal with that? I'll be curious to get some. I'm sure Donovan Mitchell have some really nice things to say about Joe Ingles as well, because that was like a longtime Utah guy for him. Like, that is just one of those things, just what kind of adjustments they make coming out of those first few games. But then you have this other little wrinkle to figure out with, to deal with this Ingles part of it. Yeah, it's going to be limited minutes as he's coming off that ACL injury, but you're going to have an initial reaction to that, and let's see how it works. Let's see what it looks like.
I think more than anything, getting a look at Joe Ingles, it will give Cavs fans a little bit of a FOMO, because that's what Dylan Windler told me during his rookie season he hopes to be one day. So Joe Ingles is a fun player. I think he's a fun story. He's an interesting depth piece, like you said, just for the Bucks. He will be playing limited minutes, and I'm sure Mitchell will infuse a ton of praise on him. But I do wonder, stylistically, how the Cavs just kind of handle Milwaukee. Like, again, they've been beaten twice by the Bucks pretty soundly, and like, yeah, Cleveland is not a great road team, so I wonder if they can be, maybe it's just a switch they hit, and they're like, okay, we can beat Milwaukee at home, because the Cavs are at least record-wise, the best home team in the NBA, so I'm just curious to see how they handle Giannis. Like, Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton kind of being, like, Middleton being a question mark, but like, Holiday, like, being just such an elite point of attack defender, like, how do the Cavs play this? Does Milwaukee just completely sag off Okoro entirely? Like, they hide Giannis on Okoro, just kind of absolutely wreak havoc on defense that way. Like, there's a lot of different ways the Bucks can defend the Cavs, and it can really make them uncomfy really quick. And I am fascinated to see how this game goes and if it will kill the vibes heading into Christmas.
So you go into this game as well, Evan, and the Bucks are just an elite team. They just are. Like, I think the best two teams in the league this year, pound for pound, bucket for bucket, have been Milwaukee and Boston. The Cavs are a little bit behind them in the standings. This is a game that
are we just talking the East?
I mean, I think Boston and Milwaukee are the two best teams in the league. Period. I think like New Orleans is like on the way up.
Yeah, Pelicans up there.
It's just like we've seen. I give credence to these two teams who have like made the finals already and like have guys like a little more proven, and just like New Orleans is very good. I just think like I would put Milwaukee in Boston ahead of them in their tier. And now the West feels like a little more open to me, whereas I think Milwaukee and Boston are kind of the two best. And like record wise like, you know, the Pelicans are really good. They have 18 wins. Milwaukee and Boston both have 22 to lead the league in wins right now. The Cavs are, by the way, 21 wins, a game behind them in the win column, having two more losses than the Celtics and three more losses than the Bucks at 21-11. But like this is a game where the Cavs win, and like they get a little closer to the top of the East. It's a nice win on the resume. It lets them say, okay, we hung with the Bucks. We've beaten the Bucks. We've beaten the Celtics twice this year. I think there's like a confidence factor coming out of this game.
Oh yeah.
But at the very least, they are going to learn something about themselves again, I think, from going up against Milwaukee. We'll see how it looks.
Yeah, we'll see how it looks, and also maybe if the Cavs do struggle at home against Milwaukee on Wednesday, like maybe it's an indicator of like, hey, come playoff time, Cleveland may want to try to avoid the Bucks as much as they can, and maybe slot themselves into Boston's side of the bracket if it's possible. Like, that's just the only way they really kind of avoid Milwaukee as long as you can, if you want to make a deep playoff run. And obviously there are other teams the Cavs kind of struggle with stylistically as well, and also they just don't do well sometimes against inferior opponents, but like Milwaukee just for some reason has Cleveland's number this year, and I think part of it is just the Bucks have championship experience. They have just a lot of overwhelming depth. They are an older team, but like they're just elite defensively, and they have a lot of interesting offensive options. And I'm just going to have fun watching two very talented teams. And I think Evan Mobley versus Giannis Antetokounmpo is just going to be a very fun matchup just defensively. And then Giannis doing Greek freak things. Like, I still think about that Marjon Beauchamp lob to Giannis the other night. That just, it's still nuts. Like, he's good. He's good. He's good.
Breaking news. The Bucks are good. All right, one more break. We'll come back. We'll have a recap of that game up Thursday morning after we cover that game live and in person at Rockmore Trilla, 7 p.m. Wednesday tip. I'll be right back after this to talk about where the Cavs are in the standings and some of their metrics this year versus this time last year. But Evan, you have an ad read for us first.
I do. Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional amateur league out there, from pro football to college bowl season to basketball and everything else going on in sports. They have it all. For example, the Cavs are plus 2,000 to win the title this season, plus 850 to win the Eastern Conference. In the NBA draft world, my fellow Frenchman Victor Wembanyama is minus 1,000 to be picked over first overall next June, with anyone else listed, that's including me, a fellow Frenchman, at plus 825.
Evan, if you get picked in the NBA draft first overall next year,
dude, that'd be so sick.
I would be happy for you, but like GM's getting fired immediately for lots of reasons.
We have two claims over the Chase Down. We're an Apple Podcast Top 200 show, and we have the first overall pick on our roster. And we're both verified.
You can't help yourself.
But BetOnline will have game lines up for every upcoming Cavs game as well, including Wednesday, where the Cavs are 2-point favorites at home, surprisingly, over the Bucks right now. If you love sports podcasts, you can find those on BetOnline as well. They are always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. So head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts.
All right, back here on the Lockdown Cast podcast, Chris Manning, Evan Dammer. I want to remind you that if you want a great second listen today, check out Lockdown Sports Today, the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. That is available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast. Okay, Evan, can I say one thing?
I am actually a little disappointed Milwaukee's not wearing their green jerseys on Wednesday, and the Cavs aren't wearing their wine jerseys on Wednesday for Christmas colors. It's blue for Milwaukee, white for Cleveland. Bummer overall.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Give me some holiday cheer up in here.
Or just, you know, Nike is like a global conglomerate at this point. Bring back the Christmas jerseys. There's another hot take.
Oh no, that's like an absolute. They got to do it. Have to do it.
Like, those were my favorite part of the holidays. Like, those candy cane Cavs jerseys were so crisp. And it was so smart that they were like a limited time thing.
I really liked the 2016, I think, Christmas jersey.
Yeah. With like the
I'm saving
like,
an
it's
image.
It's like deep red and deep. No, not 2016. That was the gingerbread one. So they're like wine with like the creamish accents. I like the ones too, where like Richard Jefferson just posterized the Warriors, and that was wine with like the deep gold. Like, those were sharp, and that was like just a good jersey matchup because the Warriors looked great too.
Yeah, and it has like the kind of holiday e font. It's just like
it's like a Christmas card.
Little effort goes a long way sometimes with jerseys. Yep. And salute to that jersey provider for that. Okay, but let's move on to this year versus last year. Evan, Cavs are now 21-11, as noted in the previous segment. They are third in net rating at +5.7. They are 12th in offense. They are first right now as we're recording this in defense. That could change based on Tuesday's games in theory, but they're on a 55.2 win pace based on their net rating. That's if they had that over the course of the season, they'd expect to be win 55 games. Last year, on December 20th, 19-12, they were third in net rating at +6.1 per 100. They were 17th in offense at 110 with an offensive rating of 110. They are third in defense at 103.9, 56.6 win pace based on their net rating. I mean, here's when I look at this, and I look, offense is up this year. The take foul rule has juiced offense. That has been a thing. I think when I look at this though, and I see, okay, look, the Cavs defense has like remained very, very good. Their offense is better. It is not like elite by any means, but it is like better than it was last year. It is not something where like I think you have still some concerns about it, but it is not like it's clearly something that could hold them back late in the season. I think, and like, yeah, they just have more wins. I think, like, even if the win total isn't huge, even if some of the advanced numbers aren't big differences over last year, I think this team is significantly better than last year's.
Oh, absolutely. Donovan Mitchell being the X factor there certainly plays a part in that.
Bingo.
So I think there's a lot of, I agree with you. There's still some growing pains the Cavs need to iron out. Like, they're so good at home that it's kind of hard to get like a full scope of what this Cavs team is, just because they struggle so much on the road and they're inconsistent at times on the road. And like, you look back to that win in Dallas they had not too long ago, and like, you're like, okay, this Cavs team does clearly have the capability to win on the road. I think that was like their third or fourth road win of the season. But either way, there's some stuff to figure out. I think on the back end, just like the lack of three-point shooting at times, if Mitchell and Garland don't have it, can be a little concerning. I wonder if Ricky Rubio kind of unlocks his bench a little bit more, because the Cavs do lack in bench production. But like, yeah, the buck starts and ends with Donovan Mitchell just changing a lot for this Cavs team on either end of the floor.
Yeah, like they feel more potent. They feel like a team that even a little more real, I think, is the way I want to put it. Like, last year, obviously, good team, accomplished a lot, took a massive step forward. I think even when we got to covering the playing games and looking at that team then, I think it was like, okay, at least for me, I thought even if they'd finished like the sixth seed, I think like getting out of the first round would have been tricky. And like a vision, and even envisioning, trying to put myself into where I was last year, you wanted to see where this ended up. I think there was still, it was still relatively early. You haven't got to Christmas yet, all of that stuff. Like, you wanted to see where it went. This team just like feels real to me in a way that like last year's maybe hadn't yet. And some of, I think because of Mitchell on all the ways, because of what it means for Garland, because of the leap Evan Mobley has taken, everything just feels like a level above. Even if, again, you look at the win totals, they're pretty similar. Like, their net rating, their defense is better. Their net rating and defense were better at this point last year. I think this team just feels like a little more substantive because of that Mitchell trade. And like, I think this is one of those things, Evan, when like, we've said this a lot, and it's probably boring at a certain point to keep hitting this point. At least for me, it probably is. But this is part of the reason why, like, you go get someone like Mitchell, is just like, he is going, if you have the infrastructure to support a guy like him, and you have other absolute studs on your roster, like Mobley, like Garland, like Allen, it puts you in a position to take these steps forward that feel very real and feel like they're very competitive and makes you very competitive. And I we have some concerns about some of the weaknesses of this team, I think. Nothing about what they are feels like they feel like this is a real legit step forward is where I'm at as we get closer to the beginning of the next calendar year.
So it's interesting to think about. Like, obviously, when you go get Donovan Mitchell, you get him to make the playoffs, and I feel very comfortable in saying like the Cavs are going to make the playoffs this season. But this team, other than Mitchell clearly, and then Allen, LeVert, Love, and I guess technically Jetty Osman, because Osman's played in the finals. You don't have a lot of playoff experience when it comes to this core on this roster. So like, Mitchell's going to take the Cavs as far as he can come playoff time. He's going to help teach this young Cavs team valuable experience. So like, when they get to that next level, and like Starsa and the Locked On Cavs Discord server pointed out that like, according to Basketball Reference, the Cavs have the best chance to win the Eastern Conference right now, just based on just like the current data, based on like December 20th at this point. And they have the best chance out of the Eastern Conference teams to win the NBA Finals. Like, obviously, if they run into the Warriors or somebody else, it's a different monster in of itself. But I don't think that's going to be the case come the end of the season. But like, this Cavs team is a lot different than last year, where like last year it was a lot of surprise every single game. We're like, oh, they keep beating a lot of these good teams. You're like, hey, they're the hottest team in the league, or they have the second or third best record in the Eastern Conference. And then there was a bit of a trail off towards the end, just because the Cavs kind of gassed themselves out a little bit, and I think just wasn't sustainable with all the injuries they suffered on the back end of their rotation. It's a bitter pill for them to swallow, but I think maybe that was the learning experience last year. Was like, they learned how to win, and maybe learned how to win in different ways, and now like, okay, the expectations have heightened a little bit. Now they have to meet them, and I think the Cavs have more than met them up to this point. And again, they are ahead of schedule in terms of just where they are offensively and defensively, just kind of fitting Donovan Mitchell into all this too. Like, I'm very surprised to see where this team is at, and like, hey, they're further ahead than I thought. Maybe like, where they hit next will be a bit of a surprise for me at this point.
Right now, if season ended today, here would be the playoff matchups in the East. We'll end on this. Bucks would get want a play-in team. The Celtics would get a play-in team. The teams in the play-in tournament right now would be Miami, Atlanta, Indiana, and Toronto, who the Cavs, by the way, are 0-2 against the Giants Friday, but are in some tough spots. Cavs, Knicks in round one, Nets, 76ers in round one. I'm into all of those.
Oh, yeah. Harden versus Durant.
Ben Simmons playing in Philadelphia in the playoffs.
It'd be hilarious stuff if Ben Simmons ended the Sixers title hopes. Well, again, just inadvertently, though.
And more importantly, from a Cleveland perspective, and us thinking about that, it's like, okay, like Mitchell and MSG in the playoffs. He talked the other night about how he's like, it basically was like, look, I think I got a little off for that game, and like I'm learning how to deal with some of these environments for the first time and dealing with some of the emotions and just all the weirdness of it. And it's like, let's just see what that looks like in the playoffs. I think that's like a ton of fun. And the Cavs are if where they are, if they can particularly, I think, be a top three seed. I think if you get into like 4 or 5 and you get like one of, let's say, Philly or Brooklyn around one, you're in for like a slugfest that like, I don't know if they'd be favored in one of those series necessarily. It would be hot. Those are like that's just like a leveling up. If they can remain a top three seed and get like whoever the sixth seed is, whether it's like Miami, whether it's the Knicks, whether Atlanta gets itself together or whatever it is, that is just going to be like a much easier series for them. And yes, the East is still very bunched up right now. Like there is, like the Cavs are like 4.5 up on the eighth seed right now. Like that is still relatively tight. They are like only a game and a half up on the Nets, so they play next week. But like you can stay top three. Like you're in a really good position to get to round two, get whoever the two seed is. It'd be right now, it'd be the Celtics. It could be Milwaukee, whomever. Maybe you even push higher and get one of the play-in teams if you go into a really hot run and one of those teams kind of coasts a little bit. Like if you keep in that status and at the level they're playing at, you're in such a way ahead of where you were last year that puts you in a very interesting place to start learning some more about this team. And that, like, Evan, that's just what I want to get to cover. That's like what makes this interesting.
It does make it interesting, and I think it's also just interesting the fact that like the Cavs are 21-11 right now, and they are kind of in the thick of things in the Eastern Conference once again. But like, it just feels different than last year, where it's again not a surprise anymore. And I think Donovan Mitchell just being that dude for the Cavs, that the Cavs have found their quote unquote guy. That if you are a long time listener to this show, it's like something they've been searching for the longest time, ever since they lost LeBron. And I think Donovan Mitchell can be the guy for the Cavs. Maybe even Mobley is the heir apparent once Mitchell maybe weans off a little bit as he ages up a little bit. But for now, in this moment, like, Donovan Mitchell is the dude for the Cavs, and he will take them as far as he can take them. And I feel very comfortable in saying, like, the Cavs made a power move to get a superstar and arguably the best player at his position in the conference and one of the best players at his position in the NBA. And it definitely puts them in an interesting spot where, like, they have a superstar that can take them to a new level. And we saw it the other night against the Jazz, where, like, the Cavs had the ability to kind of just clobber opponents, but come playoff time, like, I'm fascinated to see who they draw. Like, if they draw Miami, like, that's a very comfortable first round matchup, but I think the Cavs can kind of out youth the Heat at times. But like, tactically, Eric Spoelstra can do a lot of stuff to make the Cavs uncomfortable too, because of that lack of experience. Like, there's a lot of fascinating matchups that you can really break down. And yeah, I'm looking forward to covering it, because I like to sink my teeth into just one thing and like do like a full dissection of like what this series could be or unfold. But like, now, yeah, 30, almost midway point in the season, like, this is a pretty fun time if you're a Cavs fan.
Yeah, all right, that is going to be it for this episode of Locked on Cavs. I'm Chris Manning, that's Evan Damrell. This episode was, as always, produced by the one and only Jake Stevens. We'll be back tomorrow recapping Cavs Bucks, which, again, 7 p.m. tip. We'll have a Locked on Now up for instant reaction. Subscribe to us on all your social channels to see that. That's at Locked on Cavs everywhere. And we will then be here either on your podcast player of choice or YouTube. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Talk to you tomorrow.